chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating.
I am thrilled to have Joel Manby on the show today. Joel is an author, keynote speaker, multi-time CEO of brands such as Saab, Hirsch & Family Entertainment, and SeaWorld, and is currently the CEO and founder of LoveWorks. Well, Joel Manby, I am absolutely thrilled that you're making the time to be on the show today. There is so much I want to talk about. There's so much I love about what you're doing, who you are, what you've done. And I can't wait for our listeners to learn more about you.
Well, thanks, Lisa. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm excited to be here as well. It's been great getting to know you, and I love what you do in your business and can't wait to talk.
It's going to be fun. Well, I'm going to start with this, and we're going to talk a lot about LoveWorks. And I just want our audience to understand a little bit why I am so excited about this conversation with Joel. There's just so much to Joel. But I'm going to read just a few little excerpts from Joel's book, LoveWorks. And a good friend had given me this book years ago. And then just recently last year, another friend said, Lisa, have you read LoveWorks? And she brought me a copy with a little, little note from her in the front. And in 2021, my mantra for that year was love more. And it's about love God and loving people. And so I'm going to read this, but you know, here's what Joel says. We've walked through the best of times and the worst of times. We have seen leading with love flourish at HFE, which is Hirsch & Family Entertainment. We're going to talk a lot about that. And challenged at SeaWorld, we've seen love tested, lost, ultimately prevail through personal failure and time in the wilderness. Why? Because love is the only answer. Nations come and go. Organizations and jobs come and go. Even we come and ultimately go. Yet there's one thing that glows eternal. And that is the love that we can show our Creator and our fellow companions on life's complex journey. We're bound together by love, the verb. We're going to talk a lot about that. As we take action that benefits others, everything becomes dust except for God, our souls, which are bound together by love. May it last forever. And I just think that's so beautiful. And it's so true. It is enduring. In fact, if you subscribe to the Bible or you believe the Bible, whether you do or not, the Bible says love, you know, it's faith, hope, and love, but the greatest is love, you know? And so my aha in 2021 was, Joel, I'm like, wow, if these are the greatest commandments, I think I need to really pay attention to this and I need to learn to love more. And so we're going to talk so much about that today, but I just love that.
Well, thank you. You know, I feel the same way when, no matter who you believe Jesus was, no one can deny the impact he's had on this earth. And when he summarizes all of Scripture, 66 books written over 5,000 years, saying it's all about loving God and loving other people, it's incredibly simple in one way, but it's really, really difficult to execute on. So thank you for those words.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a lot about that. But, you know, I mean, Joel was born and raised in Battle Creek, Michigan, three brothers. You say this yourself, you came from very humble beginnings, but man, what an amazing father you had. And we'll talk a little bit about your dad and your mom, but you had a bachelor's in economics. You graduated as a valedictorian, Rhodes Scholar finalist, MBA from Harvard. I mean, Joel, you have an impressive pedigree, but I know that that is not, you know, I mean, it's not important to you. I mean, you're very, very humble, and there's more to life than that, right? But I just want our listeners to know, though, who we're talking to here. You know, you've been a CEO for multiple companies, five, by the way, that we're going to talk about. But what I'd love for you to really tell our listeners now, what were you like as a little boy? Tell us what were your interests? Because I mean, you've been this big time CEO. Did you think you would be a CEO one day, Joel?
No, that was never in my mind. I did grow up very poor. My dad was a failed entrepreneur. My mom told me when he died, he made about $50 a week for about a 3-year period. So let's call it $2,500 a year. Even in the 60s, that's not a lot of money. So I didn't have these huge aspirations as much as how was I going to not end up in a way like my dad. I love my dad and he loved me, but I did not want to end up where money was every issue. But it's interesting, what I really wanted to be was a pro baseball player. And I held on to that dream even through college. I played college baseball and I got as far, I didn't put it in the book, but I got as far as a tryout camp. I was invited to a Detroit Tiger tryout camp. If I made the cut, I got drafted, but I made the running and throwing cut, but I couldn't hit the pitching. And so that, as I was up there for like 3 minutes and never fouled off a pitch, I knew I was done. So I kind of crossed it out. And at that point, I then said, I got to get serious about this, and applied to Harvard and was fortunate enough to get in. And it was really once I got to business school that I decided I'm definitely going to go into business. And that's why I took that path. But it was not something I dreamed of as a little child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, and to your point before, your dad was an entrepreneur. Your dad had a Man B farm and equipment, you know, little machinery shop, right? But, you know, could not make a go of that. But, you know, one thing I did read about your dad, though, Joel, is just, you know, even after your dad passed away, unfortunately, from cancer, I think when he was about 80, but you said that your aunt, Jean, said that he worked harder than three normal men. He worked so hard, and he worked a 75-acre farm by himself, planting, harvesting, taking care of the cows. You know, his dad was too ill to help. So, I mean, he pretty much took that on. But the other thing you learned about your dad, and you said this, stories were coming out of the woodwork. So you already said your dad really did not make a lot of money, but he was so generous. Yeah. He was like the epitome of unselfishness, right, Joel?
Yeah.
And being a giver.
That's, and one of the words in love works, and we'll get into the definition of love, but one of the words is unselfish. And I did learn a lot of that from my father. He had very little monetarily to give, but he gave of his heart. He gave of his time. He would always mow people's lots, vacant lots, or cut their grass, even if they couldn't afford to pay him. One of my aunts was not very kind to him, and I just watched him constantly forgive her, which is another word of love, and just give back to my aunt. And he had a powerful impact on my life. Because of his unselfishness and in his kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love what you said. I just had a mutual friend of ours on the podcast, Sean Lambert.
Yes.
You know, with Homes of Hope. I just had him on the podcast, and really, I mean, he was just talking about how leaders need to be servants, you know, and serve, you know. And you say here, giving our time and talents is a concept shared by many philosophies and religions. It's not just Christianity, it's Islam, Judaism. But I believe that giving is critical as a leader, regardless of your personal beliefs, because leading effectively requires leaders to think of others, remind themselves that any leadership position is a gift. It's a gift that's given to you, right? Reject the rat race of chasing possessions. Boy, we could spend a whole podcast on that one, right? The curse of materialism, and choose to be unselfish. So I love that and how you, you know, describe your dad. So your dad was definitely a role model. Did you have other role models growing up, Joel, that you can point to? And
well, another was my mom, and she was just a very loving person. She taught me very strongly to make other people's day better. And there was a time, this one actually is in the book, where I was going to a high school banquet with her, and we were walking down the hall and these freshmen passed me, and I kind of gave them the head nod, but I didn't really give them, you know, much attention. And she did not like that. And so she whipped me around the corner, and she never lost her temper, but she said, "You listen to me, young man. Every time you have a chance to interact with someone, you can make their day better or you can make their day worse. And I don't think you made their day better." So she asked me to go back, or forced me to go back and apologize to those young freshmen and say, "Hey, I'm sorry, I wasn't more gracious. I introduced myself, you know, autographed something for them." And she just taught me that very powerfully. So I'd have to say my mom and dad were strong mentors. And then other than that, it was teachers and coaches. And I, growing up like I grew up, I would have never dreamed of going to Harvard. That just was not something on my radar screen. When you know, grow up like I grew up, it's just not something that's talked about or dreamed about, at least I'm not blaming anybody else. And a professor at Albion, where I went to undergraduate, gave me the vision that I could do it. He inspired me to do it. And I had several football or baseball coaches that were all great mentors of mine that taught me similar kind of things, how to love other people, how to treat them better. And that's how I would answer that.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. Yeah, I do remember reading that story about your mom. What a great mom. You know, that was a great lesson for you there, Joel. You know, not to dismiss people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you started your career at General Motors. And the interesting thing about this, you were part of the startup team for Saturn, but then you're eventually promoted to the CEO of Saab. And at the time, Joel, you were the youngest, I think you were the youngest CEO in the history of GM at the time. You were only 36 years old. And here you are the CEO of Saab.
Yeah, someone told me that once. I don't even remember. It's not here nor there, but I was just very, very fortunate. The Saturn did really well, and Saab wanted a Saturn person, and that was very helpful. So most of the people at Saturn were young because they were the entrepreneurs who wanted to do something different within the GM system. And so I was very fortunate to get that job at such a young age. And it was a great, great opportunity to help turn around an organization that was in a lot of trouble at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you did do that, because I know that, like, J.D. Power's quality rating, you went from 30th place to 5th place. I mean, you had great success there, you know. And then after Saab, you know, you went to Greenlight. But while you're at Saab, you were asked to be on the board for Hershen Family Entertainment. I want to spend a lot of time here because people know the brands of Hershen, but they may not recognize Hershen. So we're going to talk about that. But here's where I want to start. You were interviewing for this board position. I want to go back to 1998. You were interviewing for the board and you got lost. You were 20 minutes late, you know, Joel and Peter and Jack Hershen. And I think Jack said he almost didn't give you a second chance because he was punctual, right?
Very punctual, man. I was so embarrassed by that. This was, I hate to admit, really before the iPhone had, there was no iPhone then, and there was no GPS, Google Maps at the time. And I just, I was rushed and I took a wrong turn, and it was so embarrassing. And Jack forgave me, another element of forgiveness. And, you know, the big picture here is I was attracted to Jack as the moment I met him and the way he handled himself. And the more I learned about his company as a board member, the more interesting and interesting it got to me, because the auto industry, I was learning a lot more, or being modeled more things that I shouldn't remember than what I should remember, more things I shouldn't do than I should. And what was developing, Lisa, is this huge angst in my soul that I'm sure many of your listeners have felt in their careers. Maybe even today, they may be in some big company or a company that the values don't align with them. And even though I personally was a believer, I felt like I should love other people, I didn't see it modeled anywhere in the car industry. I tried to do it myself, but when your bosses and the heads of General Motors, they don't really care about that. It's not an environment where you can foster and thrive. And what I saw in Jack and Pete almost instantly were these were people that I could relate to and how they led others. And that's the first step in the process of me transforming from an auto industry executive who was modeled autocracy, fear-based leadership, and all the things I didn't resonate with, to, wow, this is the way people should be treated. And even though I might have felt it in my soul, I never saw it modeled till I met Jack Hershen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to talk about them, because I know Jack and Peter, you know, you consider them like second fathers to you, you know, and you learned so much about how to lead with love, you know, through them. So I want, but here's what Jack says that I just love is, he goes, wise leaders use their personal ethics to effectively manage the tension between corporate value and corporate profits. So, you know, sometimes people think it's one or the other, right? But I don't think, you know, that the Hershen family has never put profits above people. You know, it's people first, right? And guess what? It works. It works. He says shareholders are grateful that the company is healthy. Employees are grateful to work for a company that really cares. And we're going to talk a lot about that. Customers see something special and they keep coming back for more. And this is where love really does work. And we're going to dig into that. But for our listeners that don't know Hershen Family Entertainment, and I found this so fascinating, Joel, because I didn't know how it started. I didn't know that it started with a cave.
Yeah.
You know? But tell our listeners about Hershen Family Entertainment and the different brands, you know, that Hershen represents. I'm sure that a lot of them will know.
Yeah. Like you said, they won't know that name typically, because that's not a retail name. It's not a marketing name. So it did, the original park was Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri, which started as a tour of Marvel Cave. And the lines were so long to that cave tour that they started building attractions to absorb the line. And that eventually became a theme park that now does, you know, close to 3 million people a year, I believe. And then other parks that people would recognize is Dolly Parton. All of Dolly Parton's non-theme park or non-music entertainment business is all managed by Hershen Family Entertainment. So her theme park, her water park, her dinner theaters were co-owned. Also, Harlem Globetrotters is another brand your listeners would recognize. We bought that while I was there. There's aquariums, Adventure Aquarium in New Jersey, Camden Aquarium. So aquariums, theme parks, dinner theaters all over the country that people would recognize. And it's all privately held, not a public company. So it's just a great family. And hopefully we had a chance to talk about Dolly, because she taught me a lot about love and especially the art of being truthful and in creating an environment where truth can be told. If you want to get to that or talk to that at some point, there's a great Dolly story there. But
go for it. I don't know that story. So please tell us. Tell us more about that.
You know, one of the big picture of the book Love Works is it's agape love. It's love the verb. It's not love the emotion. And Paul writes about that. There's seven words of love that define agape love. One of those words is being truthful. And any leader in business, I think not only, obviously we have to tell the truth. That's a no-brainer, as everyone has to tell the truth in business to be successful and long-lasting. But we also have to create an environment of truth. And most people today leave their jobs because they don't feel listened to, they don't feel trusted, they don't feel respected. In other words, they don't feel loved. But it's important to create an environment of truth. And the first board meeting I ever had at Hershen Entertainment was Dolly Parton was there, and the Dollywood management was pitching to the board to put a resort on the park. And Dolly really wanted this, but surprisingly, the board voted management down. And so I thought, boy, how is Dolly going to respond to this? How is she going to react? And you think of all the things she could have said. My name's on the building. If you don't do it, I'm out, or I don't want to have this arrangement anymore. But all she did was, first of all, she didn't shoot the messenger. She listened really, really carefully to everybody's comments as to why they didn't want it without making any comment. And you could tell she was listening to understand, not to respond. But then she went from the most junior person to get the truth out of the junior person all the way to the most senior person, who was the chairman. And the chairman finally spoke, and she said, "Well, Nelson, you know, why don't you want the hotel?" And Nelson, who had a really deep voice, said, "Well, my Dolly, we think that hotels don't get as good a return as a theme park, and we don't want to divert management away from what they know, and that's a theme park." And Dolly was so sweet. She said, "Well, Nelson, I have to say, you have the sexiest voice I have ever heard, but I don't agree with the words you said." The fourth point, not only did she, you know, listen and not shoot the messenger, and she talked last, which was really impressive,
yes,
but she also repeated back to everybody how she heard them, but why she disagreed. So they felt respected. And so that taught me a lot about creating an environment to get the truth. And as a leader, how she handled that informed a lot to me. And, you know, you're right. I didn't actually put that in the book, but it's a story I thought of after I wrote it. And I use it in my keynotes because it was such a powerful example to me.
Well, she is just an amazing human being too, isn't she, Joel? I don't know what the numbers are, but I know I read something, you know, recently, like that she's given how many books away, like millions of books away, to get maybe 100 million books or something. It's something crazy.
It is crazy. Right now, 1 out of 10 children in America under the age of 5 get a book every month from Dolly Parton's foundation. And it's called the Imagination Library. She's extremely generous and just another example of love and business. And, I'm fortunate enough to be on that board. I still see her every now and then at those board meetings, but she's an incredible human being.
That is, I love that. I love that about her. Wow. I'm so glad that you shared that story. But I do want, you know, you had mentioned the aquarium in Camden, the Harlem Globetrotters, Ride the Ducks. Some of our listeners may know Ride the Ducks, the Branson Showboat Bell I don't know how many brands are under the Hershen Family Entertainment, but there's a lot, right?
Left, it was 21.
21.
Yeah, but the big ones, are the ones we mentioned, Silver Dollar City, Dollywood, Harlem Globetrotters, but they have something called Pink Jeeps now, so. Yeah, they have a lot of good.
I did not know that. Wow. Well, you know, I just read something recently, Joel, and this made me so sad. This is probably the first roller coaster. My mom did not like roller coasters, so my dad would be the one that would always take me on the roller coasters. And I just read something recently that Fire in the Hole is having their grand finale run this year at Silver Dollar City, which made me sad because I'm like, I remember that Fire in the Hole as a young girl. I was probably 5 or 6.
It's a classic, but they are coming out with a redo of it in a couple of years. So the old one, just from a safety standpoint, had to be, I think they had to do away with it. It was just, it was getting so old. They couldn't keep it up to date, but they will come.
Are you saying that I'm old, Joel? Because I thought I was about six. I am old. I'm getting old, but that's okay.
20 years. You only have to have 20 years and they're old.
Yeah. Well, see, now listeners, you just got the inside scoop. They're going to do a new and improved, hopefully, right? So, Joel, I have got like pages and pages left of notes, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Joel Manby on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Joel Manby. We have been talking about all sorts of things, but now, you know, Joel, I'd love for you to tell our listeners about this. While you were at Hirsch and Family Entertainment, you had a very unique experience. You were tapped to be on Undercover Boss, and, you know, that particular episode, I think it was the first season, episode 7, if I recall. But 18 million viewers for that episode. It was the highest rated episode, I believe, next to one other episode, and maybe the premiere one or something. But Jenny and I both watched that whole episode, Joel, and I will tell you, I was in tears. I cried through that episode. It was so special. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. Incredible experience. We were very fortunate that the openings one that had the highest ratings followed the Super Bowl. We followed the NCAA quarterfinals, but so we had 18 million people come from like Duke Villanova then into our episode. But people stayed and they watched it because it was entertaining. People did not drop off, which was really good. The experience was incredible. You know, CBS had gone to all our major competitors. They wanted a theme park company on Undercover Boss. They went to Disney, Universal, SeaWorld. They all said no. But they came to us and our board agreed to do it. I took it to the board because it's a big risk, right? We didn't know if they were going to be like 60 minutes and come in and try to shut us down, or as 60 minutes has done in the past to other companies. We didn't know. But it turned out to be a great experience. They came in, they interviewed all of our employees. If they had met me, because I was fairly new to the company, they would not be a candidate to be on the show. It had to be somebody new or somebody I hadn't met at one of the parks I hadn't gone to yet. So it really is true that they don't know who you are. They're told that they are going to be training a new employee. And I was John Briggs, which is my father's first name, my mother's maiden name. So it had significance to me. But just the stories that came out of it and the learning was really a lot of fun.
Yeah. The first one that you went to was Ride the Ducks. And I'm laughing about Captain Howard. He was so funny. Here he goes. He goes, "This is serious stuff here. Okay." And he said, "You got to be entertaining. You got to engage the kids, you know, and Captain Howard." And then, you know, I loved it because he was so good at what he did. Right, Joel?
Yeah, Tiny. We called him Tiny. He was a very large human being, but we called him Tiny. That was his nickname. But he had the most beautiful spirit, really wonderful spirit with kids. And it's actually a very difficult job because for people who don't know, the duck vehicle was actually a real vehicle used in World War II. It's amphibious, so it can go on land and water. And so you have to be a certified Coast Guard boat captain, and you have to be able to drive a commercial vehicle, and you have to be able to entertain people by basically looking in a rearview mirror and interviewing and talking to them. And I tell you, I had to do it, and it was hard. I just had to do the speaking part. I didn't have to drive because I didn't have the right licenses. So I had a great amount of respect for Tiny and how he treated people with love and respect and dignity, and how he could interact with children right at their level. I mean, he was just incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the experience is such that people want to come back and they're going to go tell their friends, you got to go ride the ducks. I told you, Jenny and I watched the whole episode, my EA Jenny Hill, and I watched the whole episode and I cried throughout the whole, I mean, I was just a mess by the end of that episode. So we'll definitely put that in the show notes. But the one that really got me, well, two of them really got me. Richard got me, you know, and you were cleaning. Tell Richard's story real quickly, Joel.
Yeah, Richard reminded me of my father, frankly, just very humble, soft-hearted, but really, really hardworking. And Richard, unfortunately, didn't have the proper home insurance, and he didn't have flood insurance, and the river rose up and completely flooded their home. And he was living in a pop-up tent with his four kids at the time, which I didn't realize. And, you know, once I found this out, fortunately, our company had already started a foundation where our employees would give a dollar, the company would match it, the Hirschian owners would match it again. So a dollar giving became $3 in awards towards employees. And we used all that money to help employees in need. And so I applied for Richard on his behalf, and the company, the foundation, rebuilt his home and brought it up to snuff out of this foundation. And so it's very emotional in the show where, yeah, I get to know him. He finds out who I am, and we get to take care of him through this foundation. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's important, I think, well, I'll tell one other story, and then I'll draw a principle of love for all your listeners. There was another young man named Albert, and Albert wanted to be a CEO. When he found out who I was, you know, he was completely shocked. And he had been working full time, but also going to college full time and working around the clock. And because of what I saw in him, we started a foundation, a scholarship program. So we funded his way through college. And now Hirschian, through this foundation, they're actually, anyone who is an employee of that company, their kids can go to college for free as a benefit of the company. And it started with that one person, Albert. But I think the thing for your listeners to hear, like, everyone's not in a position to start a foundation and help all their employees. If you are, then think about doing it. But you can still choose one or two or three people that you can do things for to help them. You can't do it for everybody. Andy Stanley has a great phrase, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And I think that's the real important principle that I learned out of Undercover Boss is, you know, we had 12,000 employees at Hirschian. I can't help everybody, but through this foundation, we can be generous and we can help the people that apply. And then I can pick two or three people to stay with. And I stayed friends with Richard, and at least an acquaintance. And I stayed in touch with Albert. And unfortunately, Richard passed away last year of an unexpected heart attack. And I still helped his family, his wife, with some of the estate planning issues. And I still keep in touch with Albert. So the point is, do for one what you wish you could do everyone, and be generous if you can with your time or resources.
Oh, that is so good. I'm glad you mentioned Albert, because that one had me in tears. Albert started working at Silver Dollar City when he was 14. And, yeah. You know, you asked him, you said, well, what are your aspirations? He goes, I want to be CEO of Hirschian Family Entertainment. And I just thought that was so funny. But, you know, you said in that, Joel, that you felt like you saw yourself a little bit, yeah, you know, in Albert. So
we all have those moments in leadership.
Yeah. So powerful. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. People need, I promise you, it will be worth your time to go watch that episode. But, you know, let's talk about Love Works a little bit, because Love Works is based on 7 principles. And I'd love for you just to hit the highlights here. I mean, I hope every one of our listeners will go out and buy the book. Please go buy the book. I have bought the book. I've read the book. I've given the book away. You know, so this is just going to be one that you're going to want to read and then pass along or buy for someone else. But, you know, tell us a little bit more about those 7 principles, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. At a high level, we wanted to recreate what we saw in Jack and Pete, because as we moved away from Silver Dollar City and Branson, the culture tended to get worse and worse and worse because they weren't there. And we needed a vernacular to represent who were Jack and Pete if we want to create this great culture everywhere. And so we decided love was the best way to define them. And we went to 1 Corinthians 13, which is Paul's famous writing about love, because I think the key thing for your listeners is love is so misunderstood, and it's usually a language barrier. We think of love in America as romantic and emotional, but that's not what we're talking about here. The Greeks actually have four different words for love. They have one for romance, one for brotherly love, that's philos, one for the love between a parent and a child, which is storge, but they also have agape, which is love, the verb, and it's how we treat people. It's not how we feel about them. We can be frustrated with someone, we can actually be angry or disappointed, but we can still treat them with love. So the paraphrase words, if people are familiar with Paul's verse, are love is patient, love is kind, it's truthful, it's trusting, it's unselfish, it's forgiving, which we never talk about in business, and it's also dedicated and always dedicated to those values. And so most companies have some set of values. This was our set of values, these seven words. And Lisa, these words were our B goals. It's how we wanted to be as leaders. And there was a whole bunch of stuff we don't have time to get into that we would measure it, and we would reinforce it, and we would train people in it. And it was a very strong structure to create these B goals as the ethos of our culture. And we require leaders to lead this way. And we measure them, including me, on whether they were doing it or not. And then, of course, we had do goals, which that's hitting profit margins and growth targets and return on investment for the company. But we had to have do and be. And that's a really important thing. And our B goals were those seven words of love.
Yeah, so good. So good. You know, one of the things that you said here, you've got lots of, I've got a good friend. His name is Dan Roberts. You would love him, Joel. You guys, kindred spirits. But, you know, he always says people have isms, you know. And so, you know, one of the things that you say is leading with love is not an excuse to be soft on people. You know, I mean, leading with love, there's still got to be accountability systems, but there's a good, there's a right way to do that, right? You know, gosh, we don't have the time to talk about it, but you even tell a story about, you know, when you were admonished, I believe when you were at Saab, and yeah, you'd had like six or seven quarters of record sales, you know, and then this one quarter, it didn't. And you know how you were admonished publicly. And so you're like, you know, sometimes we have to have conversations with people because we want to continually improve, but you do that in private when you can. I mean, you've got so many great leadership principles. I love this that you say, you know, when we try to please the wrong audience for the wrong reason, pain will always follow. So pleasing the wrong audience for the wrong reason.
Well, we have to know who we're pleasing. And I think you bring up a really, really important point. I want to come back to, because it's critical, I think, for your listeners, because anyone who's listening who may not resonate with love as a leadership principle, from my experience, they're thinking incorrectly that it's soft and that it's always kind. It is kind, but it is also truthful. And we have to be truthful with people. When the performance is bad, we have to correct. We have to make them better. Or if they don't, sometimes we have to let them go and find a better job for them. That's the tough stuff of leadership. I've led both ways, which is why, you know, my 20 years in the auto industry was a lot more unloving than my 20 years in the theme park industry. I've led both ways. I've seen both cultures. I can tell your listeners definitively, not only are the financials better, but just the way people respond and how they enjoy working at the institution or the corporation is better. And I will tell you, if we don't have truth, though, it starts to fall apart. We mm-hmm. have to have a strong, truthful environment. And you're right. Praise in public and admonish in private is a really important love principle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on and on. You know, you've got so many great ones. But, you know, I do want to mention this. So, you know, you did leave Hirschen after years of being the CEO, and you became the CEO of SeaWorld. I want our family to go there soon. You know, we have not taken our grandson there yet, Joel, and I'm excited to do that. But, you know, you went during a very difficult time. And if our listeners don't know this, the documentary Blackfish came out before you became the CEO. It was a difficult time. The stock price was, you know, had plummeted, you know, visitors had dropped off. But by the time you left, I mean, things were on a better trajectory.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to Jack with that decision. I had always had on my bucket list to be a public company CEO. I had been at Hirschen 15 years. We had, you know, I don't know, more than double the size of the company. A lot of good things had happened. And sometimes you just know maybe God's calling you to another thing. And SeaWorld recruited me. Jack said, hey, if you feel you're being called to go there, we support it. And I still talk to Jack. I just talked to him last week. I probably talked to him every other month as my second father figure. So it was a very amiable thing. But SeaWorld was in a world of hurt. They had plummeted in profitability. Stock price had plummeted. The previous CEO had been let go. And I came into a really strong dogfight. And I will tell you overall, I'll tell you the really good news and the really bad news. The great news that I learned so much there is, first of all, the love principles that I took from Hirschen and put in at SeaWorld absolutely worked. Our employee culture scores, our engagement scores went up every year I was there. I was there 3 years, and it was a tough environment because young people didn't want to work for SeaWorld because they were perceived as not environmentally friendly, and because they had orcas, they were bad people. So a lot of the young generation didn't want to work there. So for us to turn it around, it was A, we told them the truth of what SeaWorld did to help animals well, but also we loved them and we created a great culture. And the financials turned around. As I left, we were up 12%. California was up 55%. It wasn't a numbers issue. It was what I'm coming to, which is the bad news. Sometimes in business, and this is true for all your listeners, we all come across people we don't want to be with in business. And let's face it, there are a lot of people, unkind. Some people call them jerks. You know, there's the no jerk rule for a lot of people in business. I ran across somebody who was an activist investor who was an evil person in my mind and very abusive to me and other people in the company. And I went to the chairman and said, this is untenable for me or any other CEO. And he basically said, hey, get used to it. And I said, well, I'm not going to get used to it because it's just, I can't put up with this. And so we agreed, you know, to part ways, and it wasn't the way I wanted it to end. But in some ways, I tried to make it work for a year and a half with this individual, and my hair turned white. I frankly started drinking too much. I never had an alcohol issue in my life, but I was going in a really, really dark hole. And I was very unhealthy physically and even emotionally. In many ways, I should have left sooner. But I only share that story because, you know, we all run into those situations in business. And you can look at my resume and you see all the great things. You were so kind at the beginning, but we all have our failure points. We all have points where either personally, and I had personal failure in my life at the same time, professional failure, I don't know if it's a failure, but it certainly didn't turn out the way I wanted. And that's okay, because for me, something better was waiting for me. And that all happened and it turned out fine. But, you know, I think it's important for listeners to know that even leaders who have a lot of success, like I was fortunate to have, we also have our moments and of failure and disappointment. And I think it's important to bring that out, because if I don't, then I'm not authentic and I'm not telling the truth. And that's not helpful to any one of your listeners. And that's why I'm so transparent in the book, because I felt they needed to know about my personal and professional downtimes. I think that's really important.
I think it is too. I mean, we're human beings, aren't we? You know, I mean, I heard somebody recently say we're human becomings, you know, I mean, we're works in progress, right, Joel? And things are not always going to be perfect, you know, and they're not going to look like the storybook. And I love that you are vulnerable about that in the book, but I think that's really important for people to realize that, hey, we all have stuff and we all get knocked down. You know, if you haven't been knocked down, you know, great, but just be brace yourself, because, you know, it's going to happen to all of us at some point. You know, there's tough things that we have to go through, but, you know, it's about how you get back up. And, you know, I know where your help comes from, Joel, and it comes from, you know, a place of that the reservoir never runs dry on. So anyway, but you know, here's the other thing. You're the chairman of the board for Orange. You and I have talked a lot about that. That's an organization based in Atlanta. And I love this, because I'm like, where did Orange come from? Where did that come from? Oh, and I have another question for you that I'm going to ask you real quick, because it just spurred something else in my head. When the light of the church, which is yellow, combines with the heart of the home, which is red, the heart is red, you get a stronger, more vibrant impact in the life of a child. And that's where you get the orange. So that's where Orange came from. So tell our listeners real quickly about Orange. Yeah. And I've got a couple more questions for you.
Absolutely. Orange is one of the greatest things I've been involved in my life. Reggie Joyner is the CEO. Kristen Ivey is the president. They do all the great vision work, but I've always been chairman. I help raise the money for them to start the business. But it's the greatest organization I've ever seen in the nonprofit world. We provide all curriculum and leadership training for 10,000 churches in 42 countries around the world. And it's all curriculum from the time a child is born till they're 18 years old. And there's a strategy that Reggie and Kristen have put together so that it's coherent and the parent is involved. And that's why it's called Orange. The parent gets tools so they know what's being taught in Sunday school every Sunday or whenever it's taught. And that's the magic of how Orange makes their curriculum different. So it's been a pleasure and an honor to serve them for so many years. And if anybody's interested, it's thinkorange.com that they can go to. But
yeah,
it's a great ministry.
Okay. So I have another question for you. So I see this is, I love that. Like how I'm always like, where did that name come from? You know? And so I love that, but where our listeners may not know this, where did the name Silver Dollar City come from?
Well, that's Pete Hershen, who was the marketing side. Jack was more the ops side. Peter basically had a silver dollar, and he used that as a promotional tool, that if people would come to Silver Dollar City in its opening years, they would get a silver dollar. It's almost like a promotion. And it stuck, and it always has been named that ever since. And Pete's a very good marketing mind, and he did a lot of things at Hershend.
The great story. Well, now, Joel, you're doing something really exciting that I just learned about that I didn't know, and tell our listeners about that. And then I want to hear what you believe is the something extra that every leader needs. But I think I might know what that is, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. But what are you doing now that is super exciting that our listeners might want to check out?
Yeah, I really do. I spend my time in three different ways. And it's all around primarily leading with love, or what we call servant leadership. So obviously the book is one option. I do keynote talks on it. People can go to joelmanby.com and find all these resources. But I also do one-on-one mentoring with people who want to become better leaders or better servant leaders. And then through the John Maxwell Organization, and I've come to know and love John a lot, and as well as his organization, I do what's called executive circle sessions. And it's like a mini MBA in servant leadership. It's 12 monthly phone calls with a curriculum with 6 to 8 other C-suite executives. And I also do one-on-one calls throughout that year for specific issues for that executive. And that's all, that all can be found on either joelmamie.com or maxwellleadership.com. Either way, you can get there. But between, you know, the one-on-one, the executive circle, and the speaking, that keeps me as busy as I want to be. And I really love it because I feel like I'm giving back to executives and helping younger executives see how they can lead with love and be better servant leadership. And at a macro level, I don't think there's any better time in America to be doing this. We all know we need love. We all know something is very broken in this country and in this world. Our politicians don't offer love. We don't see it much in the sports world. Like, we need leaders to exemplify this more than ever, because I don't think we're heading in the right direction. And I think it's the answer. It's the energy of life. It's why we're here on earth, and why we would spend more time leading with love is beyond me.
Yeah. So if you like what you've heard today, listeners, and you want more of Joel Manby, go and sign up for this executive circle. Is like he said, it's like a little mini MBA. So Joel, I have to ask you, this is a Something Extra podcast. I think I know what you're going to say, but what is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, I'm going to say the obvious is love. Every leader needs love, the verb, not love the emotion. And I think love is the energy of life. It's what is the most important thing on earth that we do. And we all know the world needs it. We're not seeing it in our political environment. We're not seeing it in the way people interact with each other on social media or anywhere else. So I encourage all you leaders out there to be better servant leaders, be leaders who lead with love. And it will not only create a better business result for you, but it'll create a better earth for all of us in a better country. So I please ask you to love others.
Yeah. In your words, Joel, love works. It does.
Love works.
It works. So, hey, listen, this has been so much fun. I have absolutely loved every minute of this time with you. And I just appreciate you making the time, because I know you're busy. I know you're busy. You do your three things. And so I'm just grateful that you added a podcast in there.
Well, I appreciate what you do, Lisa. And you are so well prepared. It's incredible how well prepared you are. I really appreciate that. And I look forward to further interactions. So thank you so much.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.